You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Don Guerra.
And I'm Leah Carter. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, June 6, 2017.
To me, this is not something that I would imagine would be used every day. This is a tool that can be used by a number of different departments for one-time projects.
Monroe County officials are looking to purchase drone technology for police and other uses. We'll have that story later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Everyday People, a weekly segment aimed at improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County. But first, these local headlines.
Tomorrow night's Bloomington City Council meeting will include discussion of a tax abatement aimed at encouraging the construction of more affordable housing units. The developer, Naples LLC, is seeking the tax break in exchange for allocating six, quote, workforce units out of a 39-unit apartment project. The new apartments will be built on a vacant lot near the corner of Kinzer Pike and Gourley Pike. The requirements for the six workforce housing units are similar to allocations made in the Chocolate Moose development and the Adams Apartments expansion. Rents would be capped at $650 a month, or 85% of the market rate at the time of completion, whichever is lower. In order to qualify, all residents on the lease must be working at least 35 hours a week and may earn up to 120% of the area's median income. Despite being one of the first on the City Council to support the use of tax abatements for workforce housing, Councilman Steve Volin says this tactic won't meet all of Bloomington's housing needs.
So Councilmember Piedmont Smith and I were the point people negotiating the first such use of a tax abatement for affordable housing, so-called affordable housing, which was the what people are popularly calling the Chocolate Moose Project, but developed by HMMAC. And I thought it might set a precedent at the time. It sort of did, but every project that's come forward since has been different and not trying to do exactly the same thing. In that time, we have learned the difference between workforce housing and affordable housing. And we also need to be thinking about housing for people who are not necessarily making, like, I don't know that anybody who's applying for workforce housing is having a comfortable living, you know, necessarily. But so, you know, there's a lot of different types of ways to provide affordability. We haven't done enough yet to find different types of ways to make housing more affordable in Bloomington for every different type.
The discounted rate will not be available for cases in which one resident is not working, such as a family with one stay-at-home parent. Mayor John Hamilton has tried to make affordable housing a priority for his administration. In the beginning of his term, the city began to pursue a policy of inclusionary zoning. That plan would have used zoning laws to mandate the inclusion of affordable housing in new developments. But the state legislature got wind of the plan and quickly passed a law prohibiting such requirements. The city is now in a position of having to negotiate with each developer individually. The Kinzer Pike project has already cleared the Plan Commission and the Board of Zoning Appeals. Naples LLC anticipates a completion date in July of next year.
Two major interchange ramps in Bloomington are scheduled to close temporarily beginning tomorrow as a result of Interstate 69 construction. The I-69 Development Partners announced that the State Road 37, State Road 46 interchange ramps will be intermittently closed for a maximum of 30 minutes each for paving operations. Work on southbound State Road 37 is scheduled from 9 p.m. tomorrow until 6 a.m. the next day. Work on northbound State Road 37 is scheduled from 9 p.m. on June 8th until 6 a.m. on June 9th.
The construction work continues as the completion date for Section 5 of Interstate 69 has been pushed back. The new projected deadline is August 31st of next year, almost 2 years after the original completion date. The Indiana Finance Authority issued a statement yesterday making it clear the state intends to take over control of the project from the I-69 development partners. In a statement, the Finance Authority says, quote, "In the interest of moving I-69 Section 5 to completion, the IFA has engaged in negotiations with the developer's bondholders and has made an offer to buy out the bonds and transition the I-69 Section 5 project under the state's direct management," unquote. An estimated amount of $236 million is required to complete the project, but the state is left with only $72 million and would require an additional $164 million to finance the project. On behalf of the I-69 Development Partners, a private contractor, the Finance Authority sold tax-exempt private activity bonds worth $244 million in July of 2014. The project was originally supposed to be completed by October 31, 2016. Under the original plan, the state would then make annual payments to the I-69 Development Partners to cover the maintenance costs for 35 years. The I-69 Development Partners hired Isolex Corsan LLC to build Section 5 of the interstate. Since then, the deadline for the completion of the project has been extended 4 times. Subcontractors stopped working after accusing Isolex Corsan of late payments. Isolex diverted the blame for late payments on bad soil tests and inadequate federal permits issued by the state to cover additional work and costs. The state denied any truth to the company claims. In early 2014, the state entered a public-private partnership with I-69 Development Partners after the private contractor submitted a winning bid of $325 million for the project, which the state had estimated would cost $347 million.
The city of Bloomington isn't waiting for the renovation of the Dimension Mill to hold events there. Economic and Sustainability Director Alex Crowley told the Redevelopment Commission yesterday that the former furniture factory will be the site of a regional pitch competition for tech startups.
It is called INX3. It is a regional qualification pitch event for new startup ideas that once they get through the regional competition, they go up to Indianapolis, and that's where the real pitch competition is, and they are eligible through that for a $100,000 purse.
Pitch competition will take place this Thursday from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. 11 startups will be pitching for 15 minutes each. Crowley told the commission that the timeline for completing the Dimension Mill renovation is being pushed back a month to September of 2018. A revised cost estimate for the renovation will also be delayed. The city is working with Blackline Design Studio and the Bloomington Economic Development Corporation to revise cost estimates. Crowley said that the revised cost plus a project agreement with the Economic Development Corporation will be presented to the commission on June 19th.
We expect to bring you the project agreement with the BEDC, which will be their essential, you know, project management of the process and its components.
Design and building process or beyond that?
Yeah, really sort of the activation process all the way through to the day the door opens. And then just so you understand the mechanics of that, ultimately that will be a 501c3 that will run the Dimension Mill with the board, and we'll make sure that's all processed correctly. But the 501c3, so it's our idea, and we'll have to work through the details, but it's our idea to set it up with the BDC, but then not too far down the road, the 501c3 would take over, so it would assign over to them if we can do that.
Later in the meeting, the commission approved amendments in contract for design at the city's new animal shelter. The contract is with Bloomington-based architecture firm Kirkwood Design Studio. According to the contract addendum, the firm's scope of service is being broadened across all aspects of the renovation, including architectural, structural, and electrical engineering, as well as construction management. The expansion of services will cost the city an additional $28,800. Public Works Director Adam Wason said the total shelter renovation, which includes some new construction, is expected to cost $1.9 million.
The Community Kitchen of Monroe County has begun their free summer meal program. The organization partners with the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Indiana Department of Education to provide nutritious lunches for kids under 18. The assistant director of the Community Kitchen, Tim Clower, says the summer meal program fills a void for many low-income families.
Out of the 21 million kids that get free and reduced meals at school, during the summer those kids aren't in school, and the effort of this program is to reach those kids. Only about 17% of those kids that get food during the school year at school have access to that in the summer, and our effort is to kind of change that and make sure, at least in our community, that those kids that are home during the summer have the nutrition to play and to do the things that, you know, kids should be able to do and enjoy in the summertime.
The Community Kitchen has two routes that, combined, serve 11 different neighborhoods in Monroe County. For a full list, see the Community Kitchen's website. Clower says the best way people can support the program is to spread the word. The organization also needs volunteers.
We're getting close to almost 300 lunches a day, so we definitely can use hands putting those together, and that shift is from 7:30 to 9 a.m. This is Monday through Friday. And then we have a spot on each of the two routes that people can sign up to ride along and actually help serve the meals, and that is from 10 a.m. until about 1.
More volunteer information can be obtained by calling June at 812-332-0999. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Leah Carter.
And I'm Don Guerra. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Some local officials would like to see the Monroe County government using drones. That includes the Sheriff's Department. Correspondent Lindsay Jones has that story for today's WFHB Community Report.
As drone popularity surges across the country, Indiana police departments are also looking to acquire their version of the latest technology. The Indianapolis Star reported last Monday that at least 10 police departments across the state already own drones, with the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department and Indiana State Police aiming to be the next in line. The drones, two of them, would be used for surveillance, one for crowd surveillance during major downtown Indianapolis events and one to monitor traffic during the state fair. But both of those uses are illegal. Currently, Indiana law requires police drone usage to be limited to recording crash scenes, search and rescue efforts, and other emergency situations. Any other kind of situation requires a warrant. While police departments say they intend to use drones for public benefit, some people are concerned with the loss of privacy drone usage could bring. Bloomington Peace Action Coalition spokesperson David Keppel is one of those people.
It's a technology that really opens a Pandora's box, and it has all kinds of implications. The United States has a history of introducing new technologies and then finding that they boomerang. And I think drones are no exception. We're using drones for killing, like remote control killing elsewhere in the world, where we can engage in what is really assassination. And that is very troubling. I'm not saying that there are easy answers in the case of terrorism, but I do think we have to be very aware of the cultural implications.
Sheriff Brad Swain and County Commissioner Julie Thomas, who is also a member of WFHB's board of directors, have discussed bringing drone technology into Monroe County. Thomas says the county is still in the early stages of the discussions, and nothing, including funding, is known for certain. But if the county can buy a drone, Thomas says she hopes it will be something the county government will be able to use outside of law enforcement purposes as well.
I could also imagine that there would be applications for highway, our surveyor's office, because it does allow you to take a better view of an area to see what you're working with. So I think there are a number of applications that it would be useful for us to pursue this.
Getting a drone requires drafting specific drone policies, and those policies are still being hashed out. Swain says that when the Sheriff's Department drafts its usage policy, it will largely be based on updated case law and examples of other police departments' drone policies.
Yeah, well, we would set our own policies as well for the use of our employees, and that would be based on any of the latest case law and any other issues that have come up with law enforcement agencies.
The county will make its own policies as well. Thomas says she is aware that some people are concerned about the potential loss of privacy drones would bring. She suggested transparency in the county government could alleviate that.
I would imagine that we would have to work out a policy where we could issue some sort of notification if we're, surveying an area for planning or something like that, that we could, somehow make sure we post it on our website or something like that. I definitely take that seriously. And to me, this is not something that I would imagine would be used every day, 24/7. This is a tool that can be used by a number of different departments for one-time projects.
Swain says he thinks that keeping the department's policies about drone usage open for revision would allow the policies to be adjusted if need be.
Sometimes with the new technology, you want your policies to evolve as you learn as you go. Just like with the body-worn cameras, we kept our policy open to adjust to any unforeseen changes or anything that we didn't think of. So we would have a policy that we would reflect being respectful of civil rights, constitutional rights.
But for those like Keppel, detailing specific matters of policy does little to alleviate the creeping impact that drone usage could have. He stresses that he thinks police in Monroe County are doing their best to proceed in a, quote, sensitive way, end quote. But in general, the increasing militarization of police is something he says people should find alarming. Drones, he says, are potentially just another step in the ratcheting up of police power.
The legal justifications that have been thought up for remote control killing of someone who is deemed a terrorist, even if a United States citizen, have been applied overseas. And there is no absolute guarantee that they won't be used here. Now, there are other, it's unlikely under current scenarios, but we just don't know what will happen. We're in very unusual and troubling times. And it's for that reason that we have to be doubly careful about technologies that could facilitate totalitarianism in this country.
While drone discussions remain in the early stages, both Swain and Thomas say they are optimistic that the county could have a drone by the end of this year. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Lindsay Jones.
State Senator Eric Cook from Bedford authored a bill this year attempting to make certain uses of drones illegal. Governor Holcomb signed the bill in April, making it illegal to use drones to interfere with law enforcement and outlawing certain forms of voyeurism.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly community resources segment, Everyday People.
Don't mess around.
Welcome to Everyday People, improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County.
Everyday resources for everyday people. Connecting our community by sharing resources you need, want, and probably don't know about.
Today we have Jim Wiltz with Milestones. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Welcome.
Yes. Can you tell me a little bit about Milestones?
Yeah, Milestones is the mental health division of Stonebelt in Bloomington. Provide services in Bedford and Columbus, but we're mostly in Bloomington and Monroe County. And Stonebelt has been a provider of services for over 50 years in Bloomington, so people are very familiar with Stonebelt.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
little less so with Milestones. Milestones has been in existence for about 11 years, and we provide a variety of mental health services, in many cases to people with intellectual disability and autism spectrum disorder, but we also have a new anxiety disorders clinic for anxiety disorders and OCD, and that's for all children and adolescents regardless of disability. So it's wow. It's an additional resource in town. The National Institutes on Mental Health estimates that about a quarter of all children will develop an anxiety disorder at some point.
Wow.
The really cool thing is that the anxiety treatments are very, very effective.
Even though you're a division of Stonebelt, does someone have to be a client of Stonebelt to get your services?
Oh, that's a good question. The answer is no.
So the mission, I mean, your mission is focused on improving clients' lives by working on their existing strengths. And so you work with families as well and individuals to kind of create plans that work best for them based on their unique situation.
Well, and that really, that mission also goes for all of Stonebelt. We really try to be a strengths-based organization.
Yeah.
But when you get to Milestones itself, you know, we have four different parts of Milestones. One of them is the outpatient clinic. One of them is behavior supports. That's more like therapy in people's homes, and that's primarily people with intellectual disability.
Okay.
We also have nursing, and those really are for Stonebelt group home clients and supported living clients.
Sure.
And then we also have this really cool program called a skills development program, and it's a partnership we have with Centerstone in town where we provide services. And this is to a lot of kids who don't have disability. We also provide services for children and adults who do have intellectual disability in this skills development program. And it's very specific about when a person has a mental health diagnosis, let's say ADHD, for example.
Okay.
If a person has a mental health diagnosis, then a treatment plan is designed around what are the skills that this person could gain in order to overcome some of the barriers that the mental health diagnosis is creating. When you have mental health issues, for some people, it's like, okay, well, let's just fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not exactly the most effective strategy. I mean,
It's not like you have a cold or something and a sinus infection will go away. It may be ongoing. It may need continuous.
And if you think about it, even with anxiety disorders in particular, if you have an anxiety disorder, it's not like you're going to go through therapy and you're not going to experience any anxiety.
Right.
The point of the anxiety treatment, whether it's pharmacological or therapy, is you want to get somebody to a point where they're functioning well, because that's what a disorder is. It's when something has become a big enough problem that their functioning is affected.
Right.
And so we really try to build on strengths and try to give people skills so that they, you know, they're going to have some backsliding.
Sure.
And we
all do.
Right, exactly. Give people some skills that they can lean back on. And sometimes it's even a booster session. You know, somebody who hasn't been in for 6 months comes in for, hey, you know, I just need to kind of
a tune-up. We all need that too.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. It's a tune-up.
What's the best way for people to, if they're curious about Milestones and need more information, what's the best way?
Call our main line.
Jim, thank you for being here, and thank you for the work that you do. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday People.
Tune in next week for more information and resources that connect everyday people to everyday resources. For WFHB, I'm Courtney Stewart.
And I'm Stacey Goffinet.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jared Dill, Arjun Balasundaram, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Lindsay Jones.
Everyday People is produced by Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinet. Our engineer is Megan Wade. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Leah Carter.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.